views and opinions expressed by hosts, invited speakers, and callers do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Black Talk Media Project or the Black Talk Radio Network.
So we always say to Black Panther Party that they can do anything they want to do. We might not be back, I might be in jail, I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you remember I said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary.
Revolution comes with a price tag. You a slave to a flag in a country that clearly doesn't love you when they probably never have told you turn the other cheek. And they met it with a bat, fucking protesting them citizens. Told you go fight in the war, Vietnam, you died good riddance. The man of the house rule took you from your siblings. Turned around a pump crack right up when you did it. And they just turned all your leaders to martyrs. You was off in the war, now who was guarding your daughters? It was riots in the streets, killed Malcolm and Martin. Called the National Guard up because we ride with our guard up. And that was burning your guard. It's like an amendment on the lie to you. Everything that they taught you was a lie to you. See, they scared of your skin and they dying to shoot. Take the American dream and then you die to pursue.
One day it'll all make sense. If it ain't about power, then it don't make sense. But none of that money matters when you live in madness. So one day you figure out that all you got is this. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger. Right on. Peace, love, and the middle finger.
Good afternoon and welcome to Black Talk Radio News. My name is Scotty Reed. I'm broadcasting from behind the enemy lines of USA Inc. Yes, I'm talking about the United States of America, incorporated corporation that still practices slavery and human trafficking. So I just don't be saying behind enemy lines just to be saying it, because if I lived in certain parts of the United States, I would be a prime target. Be a prime target to be put into slavery. Not to say that I'm not at risk where I live, but not as much as other people living in other parts of the country. Today is Monday. It is September the 14th, 2015. Yes, this year is going by so fast. It's a Monday afternoon, and we have a guest scheduled for you today. Probably here in just about 6 minutes or so, we should be joined by Mr. Michael Passion, the creator and visionary behind Walkaway City Collaborative, which operates out of Seattle, Washington. Just a bit of information about the Walkaway City Collaborative, the purpose of the Walkaway Day, which they should be holding here pretty soon, is to empower, encourage, and equip young people to be able to walk away from making various negative decisions. They believe that through inspiration, support, and a positive activity to replace the negative, these young people can drastically change the course of their lives. And certainly that would help. Many times we say that you shouldn't do this or they shouldn't be doing that, but do we give them guidance and support and point them in a more positive direction? So we're looking forward to speaking with Mr. Passion today about his passion, which is the Walkaway City Collaborative. Some of the things that are in the news today, I got a couple of questions. I'm gonna put those out there now. You can also chime in at any time with our guests, or if you have a question during the news segment, an observation to share, give us a call at 641-715-3660. That's 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032#. Of course, you can just use that line to listen through your phone, or you can comment and alert me by hitting *6 and 1 to comment on air. Of course, you can use the web-based flash phone as well. Same numbers do apply. Now, one of the questions that I'm asking today is Dr. Ben Carson. Is this man a coward? Is he afraid to address the bullies of the GOP, and namely Donald Trump? Because I saw the day that he was apologizing to Donald Trump after Donald Trump went after him for questioning whether or not he was a Christian or not, or whether or not how much he reads the Bible, and you know, just another sideshow issue. And so after Trump came after him on that, Ben Carson was quick to apologize. But one of the things that I have noticed over the past 2 weeks, just from monitoring the news wire, is that Ben Carson has a lot of things to say about Black Lives Matter. He has a whole lot, and they're not so nice things that he have said. And we talked about them on past programs, and I think I read an article where he was talking about, or I saw a headline, I didn't read the article, but they were talking about, he was talking about their focus is too narrow. Well, you know, there are a bunch of organizations and movements out there that focus on one issue. All right. You got those people who just focus on climate change issues, that focus on the environment, that just focus on animals like PETA, does. You got the American Israeli, Political Action Committee that only focuses on Israel. And so, I mean, again, I think that he applies standards to this movement that is predominantly Black, that is moving against police terrorism, and he makes a lot of statements about them and holds them to certain standards that he doesn't hold other people to. He even called them bullies because of some of their tactics, and not everybody agree with the tactic of running up on a stage and snatching a mic from a politician or whatnot. I suppose it has its uses. It can grab attention, as we have seen. But he described that as being as bullying. When people booed or they started chanting something about Martin O'Malley's comments about All Lives Matter, Ben Carson said that they bullied that man and bullied him into an apology. But yeah, he's apologizing to the biggest bully on the national stage right now, and that's Donald Trump. He's very nice in his language towards Donald Trump, as he don't, I guess he's afraid of Donald Trump. How else can I describe his behavior? You know, he's quick to speak down on Black folks, particularly the Black youth that's in the street movement against police brutality and violence in their communities. But when it comes to standing up to people like Donald Trump and addressing his racism, addressing, you know, his sexism, you know, Ben Carson ain't got too much to say about it. If he does say something, it's going to be in a very non-controversial manner. He's not going to engage in name calling, and you know, he's just going to be real nice about it if he says anything at all. So I'm asking the question, is Ben Carson a coward? All right, so you can answer that if you choose, but I'll share some more information later, read his comments to you. Also, this is something else that is gaining a lot of national attention. What do y'all think about President Obama suggesting that Syrian refugees be taken in by the United States? Yeah, they talking about flying up to 10,000 Syrian refugees to the United States. I think personally it's a bad idea, and I'll expand upon why I think it's a bad idea a little later, especially when you got a country right next to Syria and Israel that gets billions of billions. I can't tell you how many trillions of dollars that Israel has gotten in taxpayer money, and as well as military equipment. Somebody got to pay for it, and it's the U.S. taxpayers that's paying for it. And Israel has gotten trillions of dollars since 1948 from the U.S. taxpayer. Right now, I think it's estimated they get about $1 billion a year in, you know, free things, free stuff, you know, as well as cash and military weaponry. They get that for free from the United States. Well, considering that, you know, they have run up such a huge tab on the U.S. taxpayers' dime, I think that since they are sharing a border with Syria, that they should take in those Syrian refugees. After all, you know, the United States been destabilizing the Middle East and countries like Syria to the benefit of Israel, and it's backfiring on them. All right. But Israel has signed treaties that you know, obligates them to take in refugees, but they don't want to take none in. They don't want to take none in. But it is, to me, ridiculous for President Obama to spend yet more U.S. tax dollars to fly up to 10,000 people into the United States as they flee their homeland, which was destabilized by the United States and other Western countries, including Israel. It's not logical. It makes no sense. But, you know, you got a couple of Republican presidential candidates like John Kasich who support that plan. And I just think it's a national security issue. And it's just a bad idea when we got Israel sitting right there that has been benefiting from decades of free, you know, goodies from the United States government. Well, let them earn them goodies, all right? Let them take in those 10,000 Syrians. I ain't got nothing against the Syrian people. I feel for them. Yeah, what the United States and the West has done to your country is criminal. But, you know, we got enough problems in our own country. Yeah, we got enough problems in our own country. And so, you know, I'm just interested in any thoughts out there about this proposal by President Obama, which is supported by a number of people to bring these Syrian refugees to this country. A black cop is blowing the whistle on the NYPD Highway Division, and this black cop is alleging that racism is routine. Wow, you know, doesn't blow my mind, not surprising to me. But he's saying that racism is routine in the elite unit that he works in, and there is a quota to write 70 summonses per month. And this is according to a report from the New York Daily News. Let me make sure my phone line is open, as we have not gotten a call from our guests yet. But as always, if something has happened that they're not able to join us, then we'll just continue on with the program and talk about the news. But yeah, I mean, this story about this black cop, you know, and kudos to him, man. We got to support these cops or any whistleblower, you know, whether they're a prison guard, whether they're a cop, whether they're a deputy, government worker, whatever. We have to support these whistleblowers when they come forward and, you know, with these allegations that should be investigated fully. Yeah, we got to support them, just like how the New York City Police Union is supporting the cop that slammed James Blake to the ground. Yeah, you know, they're already coming out. Pat Lynch, I think, is the one. I could be incorrect, but I think Pat Lynch is the guy who is the head of the police union up there in NYC. And he's talking about, I think that guy's name, that cop, Frank something, Fracatori, something like that. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. Anyway, they're saying that, oh, it's premature to take his gun and his badge. Look, this guy got 5 complaints on him already. All right, and finna get another one. I'm sure James Blake is probably going to file a complaint as well. He's got that history of 5 complaints or more in the past 4 years. He's only been on the force for 4 years. So he's got this history of police brutality allegations. And then you have security video of this cop, according to Commissioner Bratton, who is making a inappropriate arrest, you know, saying that this isn't how it's supposed to be done. Now, not that I'm buying anything from Bill Bratton. Of course, their training manuals might say that that's not how you arrest people and you're supposed to identify yourself. But again, this guy has similar complaints in his background and he's frequently gotten away with it. He's gotten away with it. So I'm not buying anything in terms of, you know, Bill Bratton trying to come out and that, like, you know, oh, well, this is not how we do things here. But anyway, you got that video, you got the commissioner and everybody else saying that this isn't how an arrest is supposed to be made. But you got the police union coming out talking about, hey, you're jumping the gun and you shouldn't be doing this and doing that. That's all they are, man. They are apologists for the criminal behavior of these members of these police departments. So that's a story that I want to share. Of course, that follows the story that we shared, I believe, last week about the white cop in a small town in Oregon turning in his racist police chief, and that police chief has now resigned. So when these cops come forward and put it on the line like that, because many of them have been threatened when they do come forward, lives put in danger, the cop in Oregon, they even ran his wife off the road twice, I believe, you know, calling him a nigger. He's a white dude, but he's a nigger. You know, I guess they're calling him a nigger lover or something like that. But yeah, when these cops come forward with evidence of wrongdoing and they do the right thing, we got to support them. We got to throw support behind them, just like these police unions throw support behind these criminal thug terrorists with badges and guns. And, you know, if we do that, then I think that, you know, we may see a shift in the thinking of police recruits and, you know, those already on the force, that they will be empowered to come forward and, you know, whistleblow on these people. All right. So, yeah, that is some of the things that we can discuss today. But there is an article that caught my eye right before we came on air. Bernie Sanders, who is touring South Carolina right now, he has surpassed Hillary Clinton in the, I think it was the New Hampshire polls and the Iowa polls, which are, you know, like early polls in the whole process of a presidential campaign or the run up to the election. And he's overtaken her. But unfortunately, she still enjoys huge support in the South among black people. And I just can't explain that. I cannot explain that to you. I don't know if they still in love with Bill, despite the harm that he has brought to the black community. I don't know. I don't know. Was it cause she can do the nay-nay? I don't know. I just can't rationalize why any black person, other than them being ignorant about the policies that this woman has advocated for in the past and helped bring into fruition. I can't understand that, man. Maybe because she showcased a lot of black females on her staff and other women of color. You know, she, her two top aides, one is an Arab woman and the other one is a black woman. So I don't know, man. I don't know why. And I suspect, I don't have anything to break down the black voters who were polled, but I suspect that the majority of her support is coming from black women. I know it's some black men supporting it too. I'm sure James Clyburn, the Democrat out of South Carolina, the Democratic Congress, I'm sure he's supporting her and jumping on her bandwagon and all of that, you know. So I just can't explain it. So anyway, as I was just checking the news feed before I came on air, I saw that Bernie Sanders spoke at Liberty University. Now, Liberty University, I haven't heard anything in the news related to them recently. I haven't heard anything about them. But they are a conservative, Christian conservatives and whatnot. And he was speaking to them actually this morning. And one of the things that he said to them was that the United States was founded on racist principles. And he also, you know, spoke about the lack of justice and morality regarding income equality. Now, Bernie Sanders is supposed to introduce legislation to abolish private prisons. And as an abolitionist, I'm behind that, of course. But first, before I can make any kind of assessment, before the new abolitionist movement can make any kind of recommendations, we first have to see the language of the bill, which I don't think has been published yet. But he is speaking to an issue that is important to me as an abolitionist, and he is speaking truth in terms of the racist practices and principles and the racist founding of this country. And again, I don't endorse presidential candidates, the new abolitionist movement. We don't endorse presidential candidates. But like other organizations, we push policy. We push issue. We endorse legislation. All right. We divorced that from the candidate itself. So I don't care to hear really anything about, you know, well, Sanders supported this or he supported that in the past. Not saying, not dismissing your concerns, but what I'm saying, if you're playing in the game of electoral politics, it's a rare bird where you're going to find a politician who you just agree with them on every single thing that they have done in the past. I've only known of one politician that I pretty much was in agreement with her on 99.9% of the things that she was doing while she was a member of Congress. And that's Cynthia McKinney, of course. And of course, they got rid of her. The Democratic Party got rid of her. All right. So I'm looking at Bernie Sanders on the issue of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And while it impacts all people in this country, yes, it does. It impacts every ethnic group, every religious group. It impacts some more than others. And, you know, but I think abolitionism, it should be at the top of your list of priorities of ending slavery in this country. Now, will this bill that he's talking about introducing abolish slavery in this country? No, it won't do that. It won't do that. No, it won't. But it would take away a major contributor to the problem of 21st century slavery and human trafficking. And that's private prisons. And I shouldn't have to tell you, well, I should, because I don't know what your level of political awareness is. But the private prison lobbyists, man, they exert so much influence over Congress. They have written laws. They are the ones that was behind that three strikes, you know, you're out, lock them up for life kind of stuff. You know, all of that type of tyrannical, oppressive, drug war era laws. Yeah, they behind that because, of course, they make money for everybody that they enslave on their plantation. They get money from the U.S. taxpayers, and as well as they put these people to work. And if they pay them at all, they pay them a slave wage. So that should be, in my opinion, especially the groups that are most impacted by slavery and human trafficking in this country, you know, this should be at the top of your list. And even if you don't support Bernie Sanders or any politician for that matter, you need to get behind pushing this legislation. And even if it doesn't pass, at least we can identify people who support 21st century slavery and human trafficking by the way that they vote. You know, if a person votes against the bill that would abolish private prison slavery, then you guess what? They got to give an explanation. They got to give an explanation. And it helps us to identify 21st century enslavers and to target them with whatever appropriate action we deem necessary. Let's get them on the record, people. That's all I'm saying. Let's get them on the record. I do believe we may be joined by our guest, Mr. Michael Passion. Do we have you on the line, sir?
Yes, sir.
Greetings to you. Thank you for joining us today.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me.
All right. So if you would, before we get started, can you give our listeners just a little background on yourself? I know you work in the Seattle, Washington area. I don't know much about your background, but I do know that you got a passion for working with our youth. And so what in your background led you on the current path that you are on?
Well, I came from gang involvement, you know, I came from that kind of a life. And, I guess I say by the grace of God, I made it out. A lot of people that I grew up with, you know, they're not here anymore. A lot of people I grew up with, don't even have a release date, you know, from doing time. And so just coming up like that, I seen a lot of things, and I seen a lot of things where a lot of elders in our community, either they didn't have time to give back or maybe they didn't know how to give back because they didn't have the equipment to give back. So I feel like now that, I mean, I can't say I've arrived or I've made it, but a lot of the things that I used to struggle with, you know, I've overcome. So I feel like, you know, being in that position, people listen to me. People know, you know, where I used to be and what I used to do, how I used to get down. And they see that it's possible. Like, you can make it out. You can, you know, you can get on the right path, you know. And so that has a lot to do with the vision of Walk Away, because I had to walk away from a lot of things myself.
Well, I can identify with your background growing up in Detroit in the 1970s and being involved in gangs and, you know, street violence and things of that nature. And I, you know, I didn't walk away. My mom had to take me away and bring us back down south. And that's how I escaped that life. But like you, and we're talking when I was like 13 years old. I can remember quite a few guys that, you know, aren't alive today because of their gang life. All right. And yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was saying, right. I was disagreeing with you. Yeah. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, my experience was we had a lot of older people. I would say they would be in their 20s, some even in their 30s, who were using us and manipulating the young people to sell drugs and whatnot. And so, you know, it was pretty hard to walk away from the gang life when you being confronted by it every day. But I guess the Creator had other plans for my life. We ended up moving back home to North Carolina, and that's the only way I was able to escape that. And, you know, so I'm glad that, you know, because I understand everybody can't escape. They can't escape that environment. Mm-hmm. They can't escape that community for the time being. Their parents don't have the money to, you know, move to a safer place like my mom was able to do and coming back home to North Carolina. So I think that, you know, things like the work that you're doing through the Walk Away City Collaborative, man, that is very important for the reasons I just stated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, bro.
Now let's talk about Walk Away City Collaborative. When did it begin?
It actually began on paper probably, I don't know, maybe like 4 months ago. We went after some grant money so that we can have some funding for what we envisioned on doing. And so that's probably when it really, and I say on paper because it's already been doubling in my heart to do something like this for a while. So, yeah.
So it's only, you've only been in operation for 4 months as an organization?
Yeah, you can say that. You can say that as an independent organization. Yeah, with like an official steering committee and people just kind of, you know, putting their gifts and talents and ideas at the table. Like, okay, we need to do this. We need to contact that person. And yeah, you could say about 4 months officially. But I've been doing this, like I tell people, like before I even took a job doing any type of youth outreach or youth counseling or anything like that, I was already doing it volunteer because in my heart, I didn't like what I used to see. Mm-hmm. You know, so I pull little homies to the side and be like, bro, what you doing, man? Like, you know, the police is right there taking bangers out of people's pocket. Like, bro, what you doing? You know, I mean, that's just in my heart and my nature trying to help, you know, and then people started telling me, you know, you could put in an application for this. You can do that. And I had a criminal history, so I wasn't really, you know, I really wasn't, I guess, motivated to be turned down as a felon. But then people started telling me, man, there's the city's releasing money to help clean up our city and your experience in life, you know, so stuff like that. So I tell people I've been doing this before I ever collected a paycheck. And so like with the Walk Away City Collaborative stuff, before we ever put anything on paper and came up with the logo and came up with, you know, we were already about this life. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I want to tell people we have linked to the website Walk Away. What is that? Walkaway.city. walkaway.city. And I mean, when I went to the website to look it over and I saw you, you know, got a pretty good social media presence, I was like, yeah, they on point, man. They put in a lot of work. And now I'm surprised to learn that, you know, it only basically took you 4 months to put it all together. So, you know, you must have been working with individuals like yourself who were driven to put something together, yeah, to help address the problems of the youth in your city.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And it's kind of one of those things. It's like, I've had various jobs working with youth, you know, and, you know, under their umbrella. And I've gleaned from, okay, how do they do it as an organization?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I volunteer at the juvenile. So I'm involved a lot with this work. So once, I've done court advocacy. That was another type of job. I helped pioneer something where we did warrant reduction, where basically I was contracted to convince the youth to come to court because our juveniles are basically losing money because all these warrants are being put out, and then these guys are coming in for like small warrants and stuff. And so for the county, they're like, we're losing money because every day that we house somebody, you know, in the detention system, is costing X amount of dollars. So let's put these dollars towards somebody that can make sure they get to court. You know, so I've done all that kind of stuff and, you know, help people to basically, be a middleman, to be a voice for the youth to say, look, this cat's working now. He's no longer hanging with these people now. He's da 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 da. He's doing his community service, to be a middleman between them in the system, mm-hmm, to be a voice for them. So I've done all that kind of stuff. So when it was finally time for me to do my own, you know, I could just reach back into those organizations and be like, look, I'm doing my, and they're like, oh yeah, we knew you was going to do this eventually. So that's probably how you, if you feel like things are happening fast, it's already been a work in progress. And mm-hmm, now it's finally like, okay, boom. Now this is what I'm doing. They're like, okay, yep, let's get behind that. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now we pretty much covered, you know, the purpose of why you decided to do this type of work, you know, because you have a similar background of the people that you are trying to help. And so, but how would you describe this as a movement?
I would.
And why? Why would you describe it as a movement?
I would call this a movement that basically at the end of the day, we want to say it's okay to walk away. Like a new movement that says now it's okay to walk away. And what I mean by this is like, a lot of times youth, not everybody, not in all cases, but in some cases, youth are feel like they're kind of being followers, right? So if we make it attractive to do the right thing, and the youth see that, like it's cool to walk away. And what we want to do is highlight your strength in that. You're not weak because you decided to stand up and not do drugs. You're not a weak individual because you decided to say, I don't need to steal anymore. You're not a weak individual. If you stood up and say, why am I cutting on myself? I'm not going to kill myself. I have purpose in my life. So we want to kind of transform their thinking, remodel their thinking that, you know, you're not the little goody two shoe over here that wants to do the right thing and stay in school. No. It becomes a movement when everybody sees that it's okay to do the right thing. You know what I mean? And when youth all start getting on board and they start saying, oh, okay, this is the new, yeah, I'm actually being recognized because I'm strong. You know, mm-hmm, I have the power to resist what everybody else is doing. So that's kind of how the youth work. They kind of, you know, when a people do it, it's kind of socially accepted. But when the youth do it, now it's cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're talking about creating a positive peer pressure.
Yes.
movement, because we know, especially yeah. with youth, we deal with a lot of peer pressure, and to a certain extent, so do adults. But you know, at that age, as a teenager, that figures prominently into your life, because you care about what your friends think about you, what other youth think about you, and you know, some of the things that you mentioned. So what you're doing is trying to reverse that negative peer pressure and create an environment of positive peer pressure, is the way I would interpret it.
Yeah, and that actually, I wrote that down before too. It's called reverse peer pressure. That's exactly what it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, do you realize though? Perhaps you have considered this in the past, but we talk about a lot on various programs about the peer pressure or that negativity that's being promoted to our youth through corporate music. You know, we just had, what's that movie, Straight Outta Compton, just come out? You know, and my organization, Black Talk Media Project, when that came out, and you know, I'm seeing all of these memes and stuff all over social media, so I decided to do a little research on gangsta rap. And so, you know, the NWA came out in 1987 is when they, you know, really hit the national stage and whatnot, and was being supported by corporate radio, you know, just the corporate entities that's involved in entertainment. And, you know, they were put out there front and center. So when I looked at the crime statistics for violent crimes, I was able to find a correlation, increase in violent crime starting in 1987 when gangster rap emerged on the scenes, and for decades following that. You know, it's just now, you know, recently that we've seen violent crime start to decrease. But let me tell you, it's not because the corporate news, the corporate music industry is putting out such great positive music like the hip hop I was listening to prior to 1987, which I got to look long and hard on the internet for underground artists if I'm trying to find some positive hip hop today, you know. So, I mean, what are your thoughts? Have y'all ever thought about that? You know, because here's another organization I'm just thinking about them, the Clear the Airways Project, which is out of Chicago, and they've been confronting, you know, the local radio stations about the poison they pumping in the youth's ears. So, is that something that you have considered in terms of creating a positive peer pressure environment?
Yeah, I understand that whole dynamic. I understand that whole dynamic pretty well, a lot. And unfortunately, you know, our youth, they may not understand that, how they're constantly being bombarded with negative suggestions, you know, mm-hmm. whether it's through social media, like you mentioned, music, television. And it's like at that age, I look at it like this: whoever has your attention the most, that's where you're going to start leaning to, mm-hmm. right? And you may, after a while, you may have a good upbringing, you may understand your morals, but if you keep on pumping certain thing into your ear gate, it's going to get into your subconscious, and then it's going to work on your heart. And you, and that same person that says, "Oh, I'll never do," or "Oh man, I'll never." But if you keep on, sometimes they used to use a method in interrogation with hostages, and they'll pin you down and just drop water on your head. Just a drop of water, and
water
the insanity. It doesn't hurt that much, but the constant dripping is like, it's enough to make you yield and bend, and you end up giving up information, you know. And so that's kind of what it is with music and media and stuff like that. Enough negative suggestions, it's absorbed in their mind. So I mean, I definitely get that. And so that's a major issue. If I can connect this to how Walk Away Day tries to tackle some of that, if you let me.
Sure.
So us understanding that, I think there's a real benefit with the actual Walk Away Day, because once they come to the Walk Away Day itself, because I'm at the gate, so because I'm putting everything together, I'm the one that's organizing it, I have the say-so of what music's being played. I have the say-so of what entertainment or even what speakers are being played. Mm-hmm. So for that one day, you know, while I have them, I want to make sure that the bands, the groups, the artists on that microphone are sending that positive vibe into their ears. That positive speaker, that inspirational speaker that's speaking about their identity and speaking about their purpose. Because while I got them in the park, you know, I want to make sure that they're getting as much positive affirmation as possible. So the hope is that the spark in the park will create a fire in the classroom. You know what I mean? So, yeah. So I definitely know that that music is very, very influential on their decision making. You know? So yeah.
Yeah, there's plenty of studies that show, you know, a correlation between media and behavior. I mean, it's not that we're making this up. It's not an opinion. It's a scientific fact. It's a scientific fact. So, kudos to you for being aware of that and making them aware of it, making them aware of it as well. What is the 5-year vision? What's the 5-year vision that you have for Walk Away?
Okay, good question. Well, I would like one day for there to be what you call a National Walk Away Day.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is National Walk Away Day would kind of be likened to, you know, when people have, you know, their New Year's resolution. So, you know, the new year comes in and on January, you know, you're like, okay, it's a new year. I got a fresh start. You know, somebody might be like, I'm about to lose weight this year, or somebody might be like, yeah, I'm about to spend more time with my kids, or I'm about to, you know, you start making these resolutions because, you know, you got a fresh start. Well, the hope is one day, Walk Away Day, on that day, people kind of reflect on their life. You know, what is it? I mean, adults too, not just kids, you know, cause I'm their stuff. I need to still walk away from on the daily, you know, so I can be my best me. So the hope is one day there'll be something on the calendar, you know, National Walk Away Day, where the grace is available for you to just kind of reflect and be like, yeah, I need to walk away from that, you know? So 5 years down the line, you know, that, you know, in these small beginnings, we start to, you know, move to different cities and create a model that's working in different cities, you know, that help youth all around the nation walk away. And then hopefully one day it'll be a walk away day, National walk away day.
Well, I was certainly thinking that, saying that I would like to see this become national as I was checking out some of the media that you put out through the YouTube channel and whatnot. But over the weekend, you know, I know in the community that my dad lives in, who lives in Charlotte, North Carolina. I live outside. I don't live in Charlotte, North Carolina, but he lives in a community in Charlotte called Hidden Valley. And this community, although it's not like, you know, the stereotypical, you know, community when you would think of a ghetto, bunch of rundown houses. And no, this is a community where black people, but predominantly black people, own their own homes, manicured lawns, you know, things like that, neighborhood association. But there was a lot of drug dealing and gang banging going on in that little section of Hidden Valley. And so I think it was about maybe 6 years ago, they started getting holding community events to get the youth involved in doing some of the things that you just talked about, giving them an opportunity to walk away from what they were doing. Yeah. And over the weekend, you know, they just had this big celebration where, you know, they were just recognizing the youth and recognizing the community for no more gang problems, no more drive-by shootings, no more, you know, people getting shot in the streets and, you know, the drop in the crime statistics in that one community. So, you know, right there, I think you would find a willing partner, you know, in that little community of Hidden Valley.
Well, you got the connection if that's your dad. So that's okay. Well, that's good. Yes.
Well, that brings me to the next point I wanted to bring up, because you do have other organizations that'll be collaborating with you on Walk Away Day. So what will that look like?
What it looks like is, so we have something called the Walk Away Day Village.
Okay.
So when the youth come out to Walk Away Day, just basically they register online, and they check off, there's a registration form, and they check off, I'm walking away from this. And there's a little thing in red that says, be honest with yourself. This is for you. So don't be trying to I'm walking away from, smoking weed. And you know good and well, bro, you're not about to stop smoking weed right now. Let's just be real. So don't try to check off nothing, because you're not here to impress me. So kids are making their own decisions from their own volition. I'm walking away from bullying this year. I'm walking away from sex before marriage this year. I'm walking away from shoplifting, whatever they choose. So on the registration, they check that off, and then they come down to the Walk Away Day, and we give them a raffle ticket in exchange for their registration, which allows them to enter into a drawing. And the drawing will be supported by corporations. We'll talk about that in a minute. But at Walk Away Day, we literally take a walk from one location into this park. And that's my point I'm trying to get to. The park will be transformed into a village, and it's called Walk Away Village. So the walk is symbolic. So they're literally walking away from that behavior. It's like a walk of, stepping into a new direction. All of those type of symbolic references are there. And then when they get to the park, the other organizations come in play, because the park is giving them something to walk to. So, they say it takes a village to raise a child, right? So you have maybe a treatment organization that's at the park, and they have handouts, and they have business cards for kids that have decided to walk away from maybe their drug abuse. You have another organization, a small business that's willing to take them in as an intern, that they can, learn and get their foot in the door at that organization. You got another organization that has job opportunities, and they're felon friendly opportunities. You have another organization that just does youth work, or someone that has studio time, free studio time. So that's what you want to set up. That's what we're setting up, called the Walk Away Village. Because if you walk away from something, you have to have something to walk to, because now there's a void in your life,
Mm-hmm. Replacing that negative space in your life with positive. Yeah, it makes sense. Yep. And it's something, yep, I've heard over the years. If you take something away from a child, well, my own mother would say that, to my children and now her great grandchildren, is if you take something away from them and tell them to stop doing something, then you gotta get them distracted and working on something else that you do want them, yep, to do. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir. And I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the resources at this stage of my life. But what I can do is I can network with somebody who does and bring them to the table. So it's too much of this that's going on. It's people trying to tell kids, oh, you need to stop doing this, you need to. And the kid is like, yeah, I hear you, but I can't get a job, bruh. Yeah, you're right. Like, I agree. I need to stop doing this. But if you give me something that I can do, then maybe, I'll tell you this, bro. I mean, it's not the answer. It's not the end all be all. But what we do want to do is we want to make changing attractive. We want to make it attractive to walk away,
Mm-hmm.
We want to make that look attractive so that they will be motivated to make those steps to change. It's like we got to, just for instance, there's a, there is a local news company. They have a publication, and they'll be at the Walk Away Village. And so somebody that might be in high school might have aspirations of one day, being a journalist or being an editor. So that local news publication is saying, okay, well, come on in, and you can get mentored, and you can, mm-hmm, work with us and get your portfolio built up, and then one day we'll know we can hire from the inside. Stuff like that.
You know, something to get them excited about the future, their future.
Yes, yes. And you get their passion stirred up, like get their purpose stirred up, then all this other foolishness stuff seems to be small in comparison to where you're going. We need to get them involved to start looking at the bigger picture and not be caught up in this small little, you know, this little maze in the moment. You're making decisions because you're in the moment. Or right now you want to do this. Or right now you need to get some money. Or right now you're angry. But let's start getting you to look forward in your future and how you can jeopardize your future by doing things in the moment. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to connect people, these young people, with these organizations and businesses that already got something going on, and we're telling the businesses, open up your doors to these young people so they can work with you and get underneath you, and they can have some hope, you know?
Yeah, you know, taking it back, you know, to cause, you know, criminal justice reform right now is a major national issue. And, you know, we were talking earlier about drug dealing and stuff like that. And, you know, I feel like I have some insights into why people do that sort of thing, because I was engaged in it myself as a youth. Growing up later, you know, I would see some of my relatives still engaged in it, you know. But the thing that I learned was, is that, you know, although the mainstream media, Hollywood and them, they like to glorify that life, that gang life, that drug dealer life. But it is nothing glamorous about it. And anybody who has really been in them streets would tell you that, you know, who wants to be worried about, you know, getting robbed all the time, because you are a prime target for robbery, because they know you ain't going to call the police. Oh, somebody robbed me of, you know, a half a pound of weed, or rob me of this or that. Now, but they weren't doing it. You know, I can't say why they got into it like me. You know, I was manipulated by adults to get into that life. But, you know, other people, they get into that life because of a lack of job opportunities. You know, we tell people, well, you shouldn't sell drugs. You know, prostitution is bad. You know, that's you could catch AIDS or something like that. Well, I mean, a lot of these people out here, they are unable to find a job. And if they are able to find a job, you know, a lot of times it's not at a living wage. And working two and three jobs just ain't attractive. You know what I'm saying? Don't nobody want to work two or three jobs. And so a lot of time, and then today I was just reading an article about this young lady at NYC college or something like that, and they were saying that the tuition is so high and that she was working several jobs and her grades start suffering, and then the next thing you know, she taking ads in the back pages to become an escort and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. Not cause she wanted to. So I think it is important, if you asking people to walk away from, you know, that street income, that you be able to pair them with something to replace that income. And so I was glad to hear that you do have some employers who are willing to participate and provide, you know, employment for felons, because a lot of times that's not happening. And it's just right, contributing to that revolving, you know, prison door.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So is there, anything that you would like to say to, first of all, when is Walk Away Day?
Walk Away Day, we got about, today's Monday, it's Saturday, so we got 5 days.
5 days? 5 days. Okay, all right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this will be the first annual Walk Away Day there in Seattle.
Yeah, and what we wanted to do was, it would be the first one, and we want to capture all the footage and utilize it as a model. So you can kind of say it's a launch. It's mm-hmm. a launch of a tour.
Mm-hmm.
I know, there's another city, that's kind of a bigger city that's in the Washington area. It's called Tacoma. And, Tacoma is already kind of talking about, you know, doing something. And, but everybody's kind of watching this first one, trying to see, okay, let's see how it goes. This is your first year. You guys are grassroots, but we think you guys got something. You know, we think there's something there. So let's see how it is. And they're already buzzing about trying to do something in Tacoma. So it may be Walkaway Day Seattle, and then we move up to Tacoma. I got people in Portland. So we'll just see how it goes. It could just move on up. But basically, what it is like collaborating with the people in that community. So the Walkaway Tacoma, the concept is going to stay the same, but the players at the table are going to change, right?
Right. Local community organizations.
Different organizations from that side lining up and giving out their resources. You're going to have different corporations and businesses that have different type of raffle prizes. So that's why it's a collaborative, because what, you know, you might not be at the, like, I'm at the ground level, right? I'm at ground zero. I'm working with the kids like that. But that's not what Microsoft does. So what do you have, Mr. Microsoft? What do you have, Mr. Gates, that can contribute to the outcome of the success of our community? Okay, well, we got laptops, we got Xboxes. Good. Let's use that as a motivation. What do you have, you know, business owner? What do you have, a food truck? Well, what we can do is we can slash our prices for half price at the walkaway day, so that while they're there at the festival, the kids don't have to pay as much, you know, as they normally would at a restaurant. Okay, great. So that's what we're doing. That's the power of collaboration. Everybody has a different lane. But if we can use our gifts, talents, and resources for the sake of the youth, then now things are happening. You know what I mean?
And everybody benefits.
And everybody benefits. Exactly. And the youth are getting what they need. That's that support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. I hope it won't be the last time, but do you have any final thoughts that you would like to leave with our listeners? And if you are in the Seattle, Washington area, you can go to the website and still register, I believe, right?
Yes, sir. You can still go to the website and register.
Yeah. So that's walkaway.city. That's walkaway.city. And we hope, you know, if you have some youth that need some help, or what about if they want to, you know, collaborate? What if it's a business owner? Is it too late for them to, you know, contribute?
No, it's not. Actually, it's all hands on deck right now. I'm so glad I took the interview. I almost was like, I don't have time, you know, and not arrogant, but like literally, like I'm getting emails right now and there's a whole bunch happening at the last 5 days. And I'm so glad that you guys invited me to have the interview. I'm so glad I was able to make the interview, but there's a lot of stuff that's happening right now that's finalizing, you know, what we need. And so what we did was we did a GoFundMe. And there was like there was four different campaigns going on that, you know, within these campaigns, all the money was going towards the walkaway day. And so, I mean, we didn't really get a whole bunch of money, but we got, you know, about $500 and something in one campaign, another $500 and some change and another one and some twos and threes here and there. And basically we're going to take that $1,100 and we're going to go out and we're going to begin to, buy more prizes for the youth.
If we're not in the Seattle area, are there links to the fundraiser at walkaway.city? If somebody, you know, that's listening now or may listen to the podcast tomorrow and they was like, you know what, I got $20. It's not much, but, you know, I want to put it to good use and I'm going to send it to, you know, Mr. Passion and those collaborating with him to provide some prizes, you know, to get these youth to participate. So you know, where can they, you know, find the links to send the money?
On our Facebook page. So on the website, there isn't no links going outwards to the GoFundMe, but the GoFundMe has everything pointing back into the website. So yeah, if you go to our Facebook page, it's Walkaway City. So whatever those letters are, but then Facebook Walkaway City, then you'll see on there how you can give, and there's a link there that goes right to the GoFundMe. Everything is nonprofit, so you'll get your tax deductible receipt automatically, you know, and you can use that for your write-offs or whatever you need for on your end. But yeah. Yeah, and so, yeah, I'm having a nice little time going shopping and trying trying to be strategic with buying gifts and gift cards and stuff like that. Yeah.
All right. Yes, well, we don't want to keep you. Like you said, you very busy, just 5 days away from the launch of the first annual Walk Away Day. And we wish much success for you all on that day and in the future. I really would like to see, you know, in 5 years, this being a national thing that y'all having on the same day and you know, every city across this country that will welcome you. So great job, man. Just, you know, you're inspiring me as well, and I'm certain, you know, the listeners are inspired. So I don't want to keep you any longer. Peace and blessings to you.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome.
See the blessings right back at you, man. Thank you so much.
All right. Goodbye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
A community is where you control your beliefs, you control your commerce, you control your education, you control your house. We don't control none of that. We live in a hood. Well, what about the Negroes that get out? Oh, well, see, my cousin, they say he's a multi-millionaire, almost got $1 billion. 3 PhDs, working on 2 more. Driving down the street in Chicago in his Rolls Royce, enjoying himself, and he hears these sirens and looks in the mirror and sees his cop car flashing lights. He squeezed the steering wheel, man. Heartbeat fast. Because he knows the price of a Negro, what it could be. And then when that cop car passed him by, he says, thank God, he wasn't after you in the first place, Paul. That Negro thing, you can't get away from. It's universal. They wasn't coming after you. With all your millions, with your Rolls Royce, with your PhD, didn't help. That's the hood. Why do you think you never pick up the paper 3D over and over and see white crowds and stuff? You think it's thousands of black cops in America. Why don't you see white crowds crying as black cops? God, my loved one, 40 times at the back of the head. Why do you think black cops don't do that? You think they're more spiritual? You think they're better dressed? No! They got enough sense to know that white folks ain't gonna tolerate it. And I will stop in our neighborhood when we decide we will not tolerate. Now, if we were organized, which is hard to organize people who are just gonna run crazy and you don't know you're crazy. But if we were, with the money we have, and the many people who would come to our aid that don't know what it's like to be a Negro, and we said, look, we saying, if we don't get a federal law to deal with police brutality, that any time a cop or anybody carry a gun have to have a license just like you do to drive a car. And if you use it wrongly, you lose your license. And if it's upheld, you can never work again as a cop or a store guard or a private detective. How do you get Congress to push that through? Well, you take your economic power and you call on your friends, black, white, young and old, and say, this coming Christmas, if we don't have a federal law to outlaw police brutality by law. If we call it for a nationwide boycott of Christmas and start on Thanksgiving, well, let me tell you what that means. 79% of all retail in America happens between Thanksgiving and Christmas. People stay in business all year, lose money just for Christmas, huh? Well, what happens now? Huh. Back Fifth Avenue, Toys R Us, Sears and Roebuck, Weston House. They will get the bill, and all they got to do is make one phone call and say, Harry, that's the senator, I want that bill pushed through in 3 days. Okay, it's an economic thing. It's that simple. But we have the power, but the system has wiped us out so bad.
And welcome back to Black Talk Radio News. Again, if you have any comments, observations you would like to share, you can give us a call at 641-715-3660. The participant code is 549032 pound. Of course, hit *6 and 1 to alert me and I will bring you on air. Of course, you can use also the web-based flash phone from anywhere in the world that you may be. I know we got a worldwide audience. If you have not seen the stat reports that we put out for all of our work that we do, whether it's the digital radio station or the propaganda that we put out through Facebook, go to our Facebook page, Black Talk Media Project. Again, that's Black Talk Media Project, and you will see links to those various reports. And, you know, I was pretty surprised to see just how popular our networks are with people overseas. But, you know, we are global people. Anyway, getting back to something that you just heard Dick Gregory talk about, how you deal with police brutality through economic boycotts. The Justice or Else rally, I believe that takes place next month in October, the anniversary of the Million Man March, which is led by Minister Louis Farrakhan. I read an article that someone had shared through social media where he was calling for people to boycott Christmas. That's what Dick Gregory was just talking about there. If you want to get legislation pushed through, if you want this issue of police terrorism addressed, then, hey, use your dollars. Use your dollars. That's, you know, that's not the end all be all, but that would put a lot of pressure on the system. And then, too, we spend too much money on stuff. Just stuff that we don't even need. We gotta have the latest this, or we gotta have the latest that, or we gotta have the name brand this, or the name brand that. That's one of the things I think why so many black people want to vote for Hillary Clinton is that Clinton name recognition, that brand name, you know, like Gucci and Versace and, yeah, that, you know, I think, you know, boycotting Christmas is a good start. It, of course, has been called for in the past. I think he said, you know, when they have Black Friday, don't be running out to them stores fighting with people over stuff. Keep your dollars in your pocket or in your bank account or wherever you keep your resources. All right. And so I'm glad that that message is being put out there, but we need to reevaluate our spending habits, period. You know, because we just waste so much of our resources, man, and we could be putting them towards things like Walk Away Day that'll be occurring this weekend in Seattle. So I just wanted to acknowledge that the minister, Louis Farrakhan, has called for a boycott of Black Friday and a boycott of Christmas. I think he said, we don't have to you don't have to boycott Jesus. You know, if you're a Christian and you celebrating Jesus' birthday, even though he wasn't born on that day, and you know, if that's what you believe, but you don't have to spend money to celebrate. How are you celebrating the birth of Christ with a new screen, you know, big screen TV, you know? So yeah, I mean, I know what it symbolizes and stuff, like, you know, the three kings bringing the gifts to the baby in the manger and all of that. But you know what, man, you don't have to keep following them traditions, and it's just a commercialized holiday anyway. It's far from any kind of spiritual, you know, connotations and whatnot. No, it's just all about consumerism. I think Erykah Badu put out a track called Consumerism. I might have her mixed up with another artist, but yeah, we got to get out of that consumerism habit. Now, getting back to a story that I was sharing with you before we were joined by our guest, Mr. Passion. I was talking about Bernie Sanders, right, at Liberty University, this conservative religious university that is located in South Carolina. Yeah, it's a conservative Christian college. And he was talking to them about racism. And the reception that he got was surprising to me. Nothing that he said was surprising, but the reception that he got from that right-wing crowd was kind of surprising to me. So, I mean, I was even surprised that he was even asked those type of questions by, you know, the person who was moderating. So I'm going to let y'all listen to this YouTube video that I found. The story was published on theblaze.com. I've already shared it to Black Talk Radio Network's Facebook page as well as our page, New Abolitionist Radio. So if you're looking for that link, because I did not list it as one of the news stories that I was going to talk about, but I did make sure that I shared it also on Twitter as well, Twitter at Black Talk Radio and Twitter at NAR, which stands for New Abolitionist Radio, but the Twitter handle is at NAR End Slavery. All right. So anyway, this is Bernie Sanders at Liberty University talking about racism in America.
If we were, if you were, sir, were elected president, what would you do to bring healing and resolution to the issue of racism in our country? We both want to see that go away. What steps would you begin to take if you were our leader in seeing that resolved?
That is an excellent question. I thank you for it. I would hope and I believe that every person in this room today understands that it is unacceptable to judge people, to discriminate against people based on the color of their skin.
Yes.
And I would also say that as a nation, the truth is that a nation which in many ways was created, and I'm sorry to have to say this, from way back on racist principles, that's a fact, we have come a long way as a nation. Now I know, my guess is that probably not everybody here is an admirer or a voter for Barack Obama. But the point is that in 2008, this country took a huge step forward, David, in voting for a candidate based on his ideas and not the color of his skin. And whether you like Obama or not, and I do, he is a friend of mine and I work with him on many issues, that is a step forward for America. But let me also say what everybody here knows, and my thoughts having just returned from South Carolina, we all know to what degree racism remains alive in this country. I cannot understand. I really can't. I think about it. I try to understand it. How a sick man can walk into a Bible study class, discuss the Bible, pray with people in the room, and then take out a gun and kill 9 of them because the color of their skins were different than his. And I cannot understand for the life of me how there can be hundreds of groups in this country whose sole reason for existence is to promote hatred. These are hate groups.
Right.
And they say, join us so we can hate African Americans, or gays, or Jews, or immigrants or anybody that is different from us. I can't understand that. But let us be clear that when you have unarmed African Americans shot by police officers, something which has been going on for years, that is also institutional racism and cries out for reform. I am a former mayor who's worked closely with police officers. Vast majority of them are honest, work hard, and do a very good job. But when a police officer breaks the law, as is the case with any other public official, that officer must be held accountable. That's justice. And there is a lot to be done in terms of our criminal justice system, in terms of minimal sentencing, in terms of local police departments, which look like armies that are invading a community. But to answer your question, I think what we have got to do is when we see instances of racism, when we hear political leaders appealing to the worst elements of us by making racist attacks against people from another country or people whose color may be different than most of us, we have got to stand up and say, in America, you're not going to do that. Racism is unacceptable.
All right, so that was the end of that clip. I'm not sure if Liberty University is in South Carolina or not. I know it's in the South. But, you know, as he was talking and he was saying, I can't understand, I'm thinking Neely Fuller Jr., if you don't understand racism and white supremacy, everything else you think you do know will only confuse you. But I don't think Bernie Sanders is confused about racism whatsoever. But I'm glad that he's talking about it. I'm glad that he's part of a national dialogue about it. And I'm most glad about the fact that he isn't one of those racism deniers. All right. So again, I don't endorse political candidates, but I'm going to tell you this. I'm changing my, voter registration from Republican to Democrat so I can vote in the Democratic primaries, because I cannot stand Hillary Clinton. She's an enemy of my community. She is a liar. She is a murderer, a war criminal. And I just, again, I don't understand the high support that she has in the black community. And so, you know, the only reason y'all might be saying, oh, you a registered Republican? Look, I've been voting since I was 18 years old. And I took this view that, you know what? Most of the racists, and this is before I got a better understanding of racism, and how it works in this country. I was one of those that believed that most of the racists was coming out the Republican Party. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to register to vote in the Republican primary so that I can help get the person who is the least racist nominated. Not that I'm a Republican, not that I buy into party affiliations or anything like that. North Carolina has a closed primary, meaning you have to be registered with one party or the other in order to vote in their primary. So I'm going to change my voter registration to Democrat so that I can vote in the Democratic primaries in North Carolina and vote for Bernie Sanders. Now, when it comes to the general election, you know, I will develop my strategy then. In the past, I have always voted for third party candidates. I voted for the Green Party candidate. I voted for the Libertarian Party candidate just to try to help them get permanent ballot access in my country, in my state. Not because I identify with either one of those parties or I buy into their platforms, but I think that the more political parties that are able to participate in the process, the healthier the debate will be. I think that the people here who do vote should have more than two choices. It shouldn't just be Democrat or Republican. I think that any party that can garner a certain number of votes should be allowed in the process. All right. And so, I mean, they do it in other countries. Why we can't do it here? But again, that is part of how racism works in this country. Democrats and Republicans working together to have a monopoly on the system. All right. And so they play us, a lot of times. So yeah. But I'm gonna change my voter affiliation to Democrat so I can just vote in the Democratic primary and vote for Bernie Sanders, because I want to advance this conversation. This isn't a conversation that I see Hillary Clinton wanting to have. All right. And again, I do not understand why so many black people are in Hillary Clinton's camp. This woman, again, is a criminal, a mass murderer, a war criminal at that, all stood by and facilitated the slaughter of all them Africans in Libya and taking out, you know, Gaddafi, who was a pan-Africanist and who wasn't threatening anyone. He wasn't a threat to anyone but those radical Islamic jihadists that the United States government turned the country over to. All right. So, pretty interesting. I thought that I was kind of shocked that he was getting that kind of reception at Liberty University. And I was quite shocked about the question that was put to him by the moderator. So, yeah. Now, let me move on to the next item. I want to talk about Ben Carson. Is Ben Carson a coward? I think he is. I think that the man is a coward. I think he's afraid of Donald Trump. I think he's afraid of white people, period. Because he doesn't hesitate to go after black people, namely Black Lives Matter and whatnot. All right. He makes all of these nonsense statements about them, and then he also makes conflicting statements. But he apologized to Donald Trump over the past few days for questioning Donald Trump on his faith. Now, let me share this article with you from Politico.com. Ben Carson is turning the other cheek. The retired neurosurgeon explained his apology to Donald Trump in a new interview, saying that he was not questioning the real estate mogul's faith, but rather talking about his own, and he does not blame Trump for retaliating. I said something that sounded like I was questioning his faith. I really wasn't. I was really talking more about mine, but it was said in an inappropriate way, which I recognized, and I apologize for that. It's never my intention to impugn other people. And this was an article that was published in a Wall Street Journal that's where the interview was given. All right. So this started last week at a campaign appearance of Carson, and he credited his faith for his success as a neurosurgeon. All right. In contrast to Trump, who is a Presbyterian, who has said that he has never asked God for forgiveness and declined to name his favorite Bible verse in a previous interview, calling it very personal. I realize where my success has come from, and I don't in any way deny my faith in God, Carson said last week in Anaheim, California. And I think that is the big difference. Trump took umbrage at the remark, tweeting about his success with evangelical voters and later calling Carson not a great religious figure. He took the bait because it was presented to you as Carson's attacking you, Carson told Wall Street Journal. And I understand that. I don't blame him for that. Asked whether he thought Trump's attacks would continue, Carson said that it would depend on what his character is and what kind of person he is. Because, you know, Ben Carson saying he's sorry and he's bowing down to the great Donald Trump. And I didn't mean to question your faith, but, you know, let me say this, though. The questioning of Donald Trump about whether he knows this or that scripture, that's illegitimate. And, you know, that's not surprising coming from the right wing, you know, because these people pay a lot of lip service to God and talking about this is one nation founded under God. And you know, unless God is a white supremacist, racist, I don't think he had anything to do with the founding of this racist slave state. All right. Slavery state, I should say. But when you start asking people, you know, to prove that they're Christians by quoting Bible scripture, I mean, that's just so illegitimate. Anybody can memorize some scripture. That don't make them a Christian. That don't make them, you know, moral. It don't make them anything except for somebody who knows some scriptures. And then, too, the scriptures also tell you don't be a hypocrite and be like those people that like to stand out in the corner, you know, looking all pious and like, you know, they've been fasting and suffering and because they, you know, they fasting for God or whatever, trying to get close to God and citing scriptures on the corners. And that's why I ain't never been a fan of this public prayer, this stuff praying in schools, people talking about all that stuff. Look, you can pray in your own mind anytime you want to. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody stopping you from praying wherever you are. What you want is a public demonstration so you can look around and see, you know, well, who's saying the prayer and who's not saying the prayer and who's closing their eyes and bowing their heads and all that kind of nonsense. So the question to begin with is illegitimate, right? So, you know, I don't blame Donald Trump for saying it's personal because scripturally that is correct. Scripturally, that's correct. Now, he's still a piece of white supremacist trash, but he gave the correct answer. You know, Yeshua did teach you to go to your closet when you pray and not to be praying so that you can be seen by men. So, you know, you can be rewarded by men, but to go in secret and ask your Father in secret and he will reward you openly. All of this posturing, this, oh, I'm the biggest Christian and all that. Y'all need to go sit down somewhere with that. You know, I am a spiritual person. I'm not a religious person. All right. And I don't want to live in no country that is governed by a bunch of hypocrites, which is what we have. This is what we have. Like Malcolm X say. You know, you go to church on Sundays, but you don't practice justice on no day. That's what we have in America. So this whole thing about Carson or anybody else questioning whether Donald Trump is a Christian or not. Look, the Constitution says there are no religious tests to become, you know, a public office holder. So why should Donald Trump answer that question? But, you know, Ben Carson, he made a lot of money selling books and stuff to Christians and whatnot and going to a bunch of Christian conferences where people pay, you know, $40-$50 to go hear him speak. And so he gonna keep playing that role. He gonna keep playing that role. But my thing is, why you apologizing to Trump? Is you scared of Trump? Are you scared of that big bully? You know, because that is what Trump is. He's a bully. He's a bully. But he wants to attack. I'm talking about Ben Carson, that is. He wants to attack people in Black Lives Matter or any other group of protesters out there that are protesting against police terrorism, 21st century slavery and human trafficking in this country. And while, you know, some people may disagree with running up on the politician stage and snatching a mic and saying some chants and stuff like that, you know, I mean, people may disagree with it and I might also be one. It depends on what my intent is. But for Ben Carson to classify that or categorize that as them being bullies, I think he said he was talking about Martin O'Malley. Martin O'Malley said the same thing Hillary Clinton said, but she didn't get no heat for it. Go figure. When she stood in a Ferguson church and said all lives matter in response to Black Lives Matter. Martin O'Malley, the governor of Maryland, former governor of Maryland, said the same thing, and then they started heckling him, and then later he came back and he apologized. And Ben Carson said they bullied him into apologizing. Now, this is the quote from Ben Carson. "I detest political correctness. People died. They paid with their lives so we could have freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And political correctness is the antithesis of that," he said. Carson recalled the time one candidate, talking about Martin O'Malley, was heckled by Black Lives Matter activists for saying all lives matter. "He got so much grief he came back and apologized," Carson said. "That's bullying. When have you heard Carson call Donald Trump a bully for the nasty things he have said about women?" Carly Fioroni, I'm not sure how you pronounce her name, the former corporate executive for, I think it was Hewlett-Packard or something like that. Anyway, wasn't that last week he was talking about her face? You know, he was talking about, "Look at that face. Would you vote for that?" You know, just being his old childish, immature, sexist and racist self. You know, I didn't hear him calling out Ben Carson for bullying that Hispanic journalist for Univision, you know, who kept trying to ask him a question, raising his hand, but Trump wouldn't acknowledge him. So he stood up and you know, to make sure that he could have his question asked. And what did Trump do? Just bully the man, bullied him. You know, when Trump talked about if any Black Lives Matters people come and try to interview my venue, I'm going to fight them. Well, I might not fight them, but somebody going to fight them. You know, this is all bullying. Trump is a bully. You know, I don't need to go through his whole history with Rosie O'Donnell and other people. This man is a bully. Have you ever seen that show, The Apprentice? I've seen, you know, outtakes from it and stuff. The man is a bully. He's a bully. But why Ben Carson ain't calling him out? Why? Could it be because Donald Trump is white and Donald Trump has a lot of white supporters and he's trying to get those supporters over into his camp, so he's not going to challenge Donald Trump and call him a bully? You know, and he's quick with an apology for Donald Trump. And then you don't like political, you detest political correctness. Then why would you say something like they should take the black out of Black Lives Matter and it should be all lives matter or lives matter? Aren't you being politically correct? So this dude, man, he to use a biblical term, and it's not really a biblical term, but it's where I first heard the term, is double-mindedness. In other words, he's contradicting himself. He has two minds. On one end, he hates political correctness. He wants Black Lives Matter people to be politically correct and not say black and just say lives matter. Minded person. And we, you know, I should know the Bible or any biblical soul should know what the Bible says about people who are double-minded. That they shouldn't think that they would get anything, all right? Now, I also think that Ben Carson called us. I'm going to read this quote. Maybe let me close some of my windows. Y'all are with me, these tech issues. Really do need to get a new computer or add some more RAM to this computer. So just check things right quick. I'm like kind of paralyzed. So let me continue. We'll clear up when it clears up. This is one of the things he had to say. "I'm hopeful that one of the lessons," and he was commenting on Ferguson. All right, let me close some of these while I still can. All right, he had with the Ferguson, and he was speaking about Ferguson in this interview that he did recently. Let me see. "I'm hopeful that one of the lessons that comes out of Ferguson is the need to begin those dialogues before there's a problem and to create those relationships before there's a problem," Carson said. "You know, the reason that we have these complex brains with these big frontal lobes is so that we can process information from the past and the present and to project it into a plan for the future instead of just reacting like animals do." I'm taking that as he's calling all of these protesters who have been rising up in rebellion, calling them animals. That's what I think he's doing there. You know, I'm not a brain surgeon or anything like that, but you know, I think that I when I was in school, I ranked pretty high in reading comprehension. And that's what I'm comprehending that Ben Carson is saying about these protesters is that, you know, they got these brains, but they're not using these brains because, you know, they're not able to process information correctly and look at the past and look at how it relates to today and project it to a plan for the future. See, he's playing off of what Hillary Clinton came out and said about them Black Lives Matter Boston protesters that got a little private meeting with her. Where's your plan? You ain't got a plan. You know, where's your policy initiatives? And while in other contexts that might be appropriate to say, but not in the context in which she was doing it. She was basically talking down to them. And that's what Ben Carson is doing here. He's just continuing on, piling on Black Lives Matter. They ain't got no plan. Well, you know, I am a student of history. You know, I'm not a brain surgeon, never been to medical school. I haven't separated any conjoined twins or anything like that. But I like to read. And history has been one of my favorite subjects, you know, since the time I could read. And so history tells me, though, that there have been many policy changes and societal changes that have come about in the United States of America due to people rioting and rebelling. Now, these people tried to do it the right way, as they say. They tried to have a conversation. Let's just use, for example, taxation without representation. You know, they tried to tell the King George that, you know what, y'all just overtaxing us and we don't have any representation in your court, in your monarchy and whatnot, and you're just taking our money, our hard-earned money and whatnot. And you know, I'm sure didn't they try to have a conversation about that, about you taxing us too much? And then when the king didn't lower the taxes on the colonists, what did they do? They started a dang gone war. Ain't that right? Huh? When there was a movement for labor rights in this country, you know, people was tired of going into these corporate places of business and their lives being put in danger because they didn't have certain safety, you know, protocols in place, and workers was getting killed, and you know, management didn't really care and all this and that, or you know, just we could look across a number of industries. There have been riots after those workers said, look, you ain't paying us enough, we're putting our lives in danger going into these mines to you know, dig for coal and whatnot, and you're not paying us, and we don't feel safe, too many of us is getting killed and whatnot. Well, you know, they tried talking to you know, the captains of industry about raising their pay, but when they did not get a raise in their pay, they started protesting, right? They started the picket line and they weren't going to work. And so then those corporate industries also started hiring scabs and then hiring people to go out there and bust some heads and fight with those people and make them, force them to go back to work. You know what I'm saying? And then those people fought back. And so then, because of all that violence and upheaval and pressure by those people, now, you know, you got union labors and stuff, and you got labor rights in this country. You got laws and stuff against the exploitation of labor, even though it still goes on. But, you know, the point that I'm making is Ben Carson is ignorant of history. And how does he not know if those organizations in the area of Ferguson in St. Louis County, that they haven't been complaining for years and talking to their representatives about this or that, and they just getting a bunch of lip service. And then next thing you know, Michael Brown is dead, shot in the head, you know, while running away, trying to get away from a killer cop, Darren Wilson. All right. So that's just saying, he's saying that, oh, they just reacting. You know, well, damn, you know, maybe they tired of talking. Maybe nobody's listening. So now they turning out in the streets to make you listen. To make you listen. All right. And so for him to insult them and say, to suggest that they got little monkey brains or something like that, and they're unable to analyze these problems and come up with solutions. I mean, the solution is simple. They telling you, stop killing us. Hold killer cops accountable. Put killer cops in cell blocks, as they say in Baltimore. All right. That ain't complex. That's the solution. But we know that you passed all these laws and given these police unions power to help these cops escape accountability. And we know this. So it isn't that the people out in the streets and advocating, you know, on the behalf of the victims of police terrorism. It's not that we don't understand the past. We understand that police came out of the 1600s. In the 1600s, the slave patrols. Yeah. To put people back into slavery and to target the free African population. Enforcing black codes and targeting black people to put them into Jim Crow slavery. Yeah, we understand the past. We understand the past. And we understand the present. And we say, as a new abolitionist movement, that it's still going on to this day. And one of the things that we say to start the process is to repeal the 13th Amendment, or at least remove the slavery exception clause, which allows people to practice slavery against other people as long as you have, you know, fixed the jury to convict them. So Ben Carson, man, I think he's a coward. Because he won't take on Donald Trump or any of the other white supremacists out there. And he wants to pile on those, as he see, being powerless. He wants to pile on the people who are being oppressed. So, you know, Ben Carson, man, I don't have nothing nice to say about him. And I don't think acknowledging or saying that the man is a coward is me engaging in petty name calling and whatnot. No, I'm acknowledging that this man has characteristics that point to cowardice. He's a coward. He doesn't want to take on white supremacy. What he wants to do is to get a position in the system where he'll be highly paid and have privilege and whatnot. People will call him Mr. President and all of that. And he don't give a damn about the rest of us. He's a proxy to a racism. Now, I remember one article he was talking about, you know, doing black voter outreach. He was saying the Republican Party needs to reach out more to non-white people and the black voters and blah, 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 blah. But when we reached out as a network, Black Talk Radio Network, and invited him to come on our program, where we have a predominant audience of, at any given month, at least 30,000 black people, all right, then black, I can't say all of them are black voters because I know they're not. But if you want to do outreach to the black community, why wouldn't you come on Black Talk Radio, huh? Do you want us to remove the black from the name and just call it Talk Radio? Then you'll be comfortable enough to come on our program. You know, since you want us to be politically correct and all this and that. So, anyway, I tell you, this man, like somebody wrote today about my comments about that he is well educated by books with no common sense, a real waste of talent where it is needed most. Another person wrote, studying the brain does not mean you have common sense. Another person said, and he sounds like that unhappy uncle who is bored with his life. I wish he stuck to being a doctor. I liked him a lot more. So those are some of the comments that was shared with us. All right. Seems like I got my system back under control. Yeah. So Ben Carson, if you're listening, if anybody, a member of your team is listening, you have an open invitation to come on Black Talk Radio News and have a conversation about these issues. Let's put our brains together, all right? Put our frontal lobes together, and let's talk about the past and the present. And as president, if you are elected president, how are you going to address police terrorism, slavery, 21st century slavery, and human trafficking? That's all I got to say about Ben Carson today. Now, Tando Radio Show is coming on air at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, so make sure y'all stay tuned for that. Today, Brother Dave will be talking about oil derivatives. He's saying that China, and I'll be educated as I listen to him tonight, about oil derivatives. And I've heard of that term, commodity derivatives and other things of that. Now, I'm not totally ignorant about it. But he's saying China is creating a lot of oil derivatives. The best way I can translate that is China is buying up the oil that's on the market, with oil recently being, you know, at I guess, you know, historic lows and whatnot, that they have been buying up a whole lot of oil. But anyway, he wants to talk about, what does that mean for you? Because the mainstream media isn't talking about China buying up all this oil and creating these derivatives. And so, you know, why aren't they talking about it and what it is that you need to know so that you can be prepared for any way that it will impact you? Because that's the main theme of the Tando Radio Show, is preparedness, being prepared for whatever may come your way. So hope that y'all will stay tuned for Tando Radio Show coming up at 6 o'clock. One of the questions I put out there is, what do you think about President Obama suggesting that Syrian refugees be taken in by the United States? I think it's a bad idea right off the top. I'm telling you, it's a bad idea from a national security perspective, because the United States and these people over there ain't ignorant. They know the United States and the UK and Israel destroyed their country, all right, that they funded, trained, and armed all of those rabid dogs that's running loose in Syria, which is one of the reasons they overthrew Libya, so that they can liberate Libyans' stockpile of weapons and arm those little terrorists that they using to overthrow the Syrian government, right? Man, they've been after Syria for a long time, and they can talk all the smack they want about this country or that country. We live in a country that practices slavery and human trafficking more than any other country on the face of the earth, where its own citizens are being gunned down by hundreds every month. We're over 800 people killed in 2015 by cops. Some of them might have asked for it, you know, when they were shooting at cops and got shot or whatnot. But a lot of these people are unarmed, and many, many more are being brutalized and beaten and tased to death. As I saw a video of a black woman in a jail suffering a mental breakdown, and she was tased not four different times, but four different people tased her all at once. That's the country we live in, all right? That's the country we live in, where all these homeless people, all these people living in poverty, living below the poverty line. That, you know, so before you listen to the U.S. media, corporate media talking bad about some other country, you need to recognize the hellhole that you live in. And so then you want to destroy their country, and then you want to allow some of these people, up to 10,000 of them, to come here. You know, that's a perfect opportunity for somebody to embed themselves within them refugees and then come over here and carry out acts of terrorism. You know, if they were sticking to government targets and military targets, then, you know, that's all well and fine. But, you know, because it is a global war that George Bush called it, the war on terror. He started this war with these people, and it started long before him. But anyway, But a lot of times these people, which I tend to think that they're false flag events, and false flag meaning that these people had government assistance or the government allowed it to happen. Like I believe with 9/11, they allowed them people into this country. They allowed them people with all kind of red flags and stuff. They allowed them to go through that little bit of training they went through, and then they allowed them people to slam them planes into them buildings. All right. They allowed that. And so then now you're talking about allowing people who have a right, righteous beef with this country. You want to just bring 10,000 of them over here. That's a bad move. That's a bad move. It's, and we got too many other problems in this country to be taking in 10,000 refugees like that from Syria. Yeah, you broke the country. You need to fix what you broke, or just get the hell out and quit supporting them terrorists trying to overthrow that country. But since you already broke it, and these people do need help, I do acknowledge that they do need help. All right. I think since you give so many billions upon billions upon billions, who knows the trillions of U.S. tax dollars that have been given to Israel, and Israel has a border with Syria. Damn it, make Israel take them in. And they're refusing to take them in, which is in violation of the treaty that they signed. See, there's always this double standard when it comes to them racist white supremacists known as the Israeli government. It's always a double standard. They are never held to the same standard as everybody else. This government, the U.S. government, protects their apartheid government and their practicing of racism and genocide against people in that area of the world. And not only do you protect them, but you also fund it. Now, you've been funding these people for so long, they done got trillions of U.S. tax dollars, and they ain't even U.S. citizens. You want to talk about, you know, limiting access to welfare to immigrants who come across the Mexican border? Well, how about cutting off all that welfare payments you making to Israel? They ain't citizens. See what I'm talking about, people? See what I'm talking about? The hypocrisy, the racism, the white supremacy. So if I was president of this corporation, if I was the chief executive officer, I'd be on that phone call. I'd be on that phone with Benjamin Netanyahu and telling him, you know what? We did all this for y'all to begin with. Now we've created a humanitarian crisis, and you're going to have to do your part, and you're going to have to take some of these refugees in. All right. It's not cool for everybody else to take them in, and you, even though you signed this treaty to ignore your obligations to the international community and turn these people away because they're not Jews, well, hell, that's religious bigotry, and it's also racism, because I'm sure them being Arabs got something to do with it. Why you don't want to let them in? They ain't German-descended Ashkenazi Jews, so no, you can't come. And all. But you know what? If you don't take them in, then that next welfare check you do to get from the U.S. taxpayers, well, I'm vetoing it. You're not getting it. I'm shutting it down. So you got a choice. You can either, you know, take in these refugees, or we're cutting off the spigot. You are no longer getting all of these free goods and goodies and cash from the United States. That's what the answer should be. That's what President Obama should be suggesting, and not suggesting that these refugees be flown from halfway over around the world. And then where you going to put them at? Where you going to put them at, huh? So anyway, that's my thoughts on that. I think that is ridiculous. That's a ridiculous suggestion for the president to be making. And last not least, let me see. We only got a few minutes left before Brother Dave is due to call in and get ready to start his program. But you got a black cop. I've linked to this story. I hope that you'll check it out. This is what we want cops to do. Now, you heard Bernie Sanders talk about vast majority of cops are good and honest people. That's bullshit. All right. That's horse shit. All right. They are not. They are engaged in human trafficking. All right. They are engaged in slavery. They are engaged in extortion. And so, you know, the only good cops I know of is those who come forth and they blow the whistle. And you got this black cop by the name of, I think his name is Dana Harge, who is 40 years old, and he's filed a federal complaint. Again, we just had a white cop last week turn in his racist police chief and force that guy out of his position. Now we got this officer, this black cop, saying that the NYPD Highway Division practices racism on a routine basis and that they are required to write tickets. Remember, and he's telling the truth, because remember the NYPD, to stage a little protest against the mayor, de Blasio, for talking about police brutality and stuff, they said, we ain't writing no tickets this week. We doing a work stoppage. And let's see how you bring in $10 million a week then without us. So you know he's telling the truth. And he's saying that they were required to write 70 summonses per month. All right. And that if you did not do that, you will then be given inconvenient tours of duty, a bad car to work with, and even an involuntary transfer out of the highway patrol, something that bodes badly for an officer's career. Let's see if we can get this clip from New York Daily News to play. It may play an ad. I might have to mute it.
The more you learn about your insurance, the more gaps you may find. Like how you...
And it's starting
to lock
up. Think
you have coverage for this when you only have coverage for...
All right, we'll let that ad play once it starts, and we'll close it out with these comments from Officer Harge, who's talking about systemic racism.
A black cop blows the whistle on racism. Highway NYPD Dana Harge filed the discrimination complaints with the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and NYPD's Office of Equal Employment, arguing that many actions taken against him were motivated by race. Harge contends he has made more than 300 arrests for DWI and was honored by Mothers Against Drunk Drivers in 2013 for making the most drunk driving arrests of any NYPD highway cop that year. Harge was recommended for promotion to detective, but according to the complaint, a higher-up in the highway unit put the kibosh on the paperwork, which mysteriously disappeared. The complaint depicts the highway unit as a nearly all-white command. There are only two black cops in Highway 3, and citywide, the highway unit is only 4% black. A NYPD spokesman confirmed the complaint is currently under investigation and did not comment further on the cops' allegations.
Now, that kind of sounds like he's complaining because this is affecting him personally. Now, I don't know. I ain't got a problem with him going out there getting drunk drivers off the road. You know, that's a crime. You're putting people in danger. Let me close this out. I ain't got a problem with that. But I want to know how many victimless crime how many people he has arrested for victimless crimes, how many tickets he has written just for the sake of meeting a quota so he can move ahead. And now that he's not moving ahead, now he's making a complaint. So again, this there ain't no majority, no good cops in these police departments. The whole system is corrupt, man. And so I'm going to have to do some more research on this. It seems like, you know, he's only complaining is because he's not moving up the ladder in the system of racism and white supremacy fast enough. All right. So that's something I will look more into and talk about it at a later date. Perhaps we can talk about it tomorrow. All right. With that said, we're going to bring a conclusion to Black Talk Radio News. I want to again thank our guest who joined us today, Mr. Michael Passion, the creator and visionary behind Walkaway City Collaborative. Walkaway Day will be occurring this Saturday, and what they're doing is giving youth the opportunity to walk away with from bad and destructive behavior and then replace that destructive path with a more positive path. and providing them with the resources that they need to do that. So we hope that y'all will support them. All right. Recognize the fact that you live on a battlefield. This is Battlefield America. There are casualties being created every day. All right. They're trying to put you into slavery. They make a whole lot of money off of human trafficking, a whole lot of money off of writing tickets for the sake of writing tickets and filling up their coffers. All right. So need to develop skills that will help you to move around behind these enemy lines and not become a victim. There's no guarantee. There is no foolproof methods, but they will decrease the likelihood of you becoming victimized by these people. All right. So I would recommend the YouTube channel Flex Your Rights. Flex Your Rights is a YouTube channel where you can get tips on how to interact with these cops. That said, I'll be back on air tomorrow. Tomorrow's Tuesday. We do have a guest scheduled for you tomorrow, so we'll be back on air tomorrow and at 4 o'clock p.m. Eastern time, and we hope that you will join us and bring a friend. Peace and blessings to all.